From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Intelligent Intervention. Robert Stephen Thomas joins us. Here's what's happening. Well, Senator Rand Paul has ended his more than 10-hour filibuster over President Obama's CIA nominee, but the big issue concern drones, the ability of the president's authority to kill Americans with drones. As a matter of fact, the attorney general, in an appearance before the House Judiciary Committee, Eric Holder, defended the Obama administration's targeted killings policy, even in cases of American citizens who may be on U.S. soil in some situations where they believe they are planning an imminent attack on the country. Everyone is so obsessed because there's no due process here. The drones will just take off, fire their missiles, and possibly kill Americans who have not been convicted of anything. Google says the FBI, by the way, is monitoring the web for potential terrorist activity, but it can't say how extensive the surveillance is. As part of the Google Transparency Report, the internet giant this week released data on so-called national security letters, official requests for data under the Patriot Act passed after the 9/11 attacks. But Google said it was only allowed to provide broad ranges of numbers in the years 2009 to 2012. Internet watcher for us, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, is this serious enough or is this safety?
Yeah, before I get into the details, I should mention, of course, just full disclosure, that since I am currently doing some consulting to Google,
all right,
everything I'm about to say is what I'm saying. I'm not speaking for Google.
You got it.
Let's talk a little bit about national security letters, about NSLs. You can be sure that all of the big internet service providers, and probably some of the small ones, of internet services, ISPs, Google, Microsoft, Yahoo, AT&T, Verizon, Comcast, on and on. If they're of any significant size, the odds are they get national security letters. And those come from the federal government, and they demand user data. And you remember the movie Fight Club?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the first,
sure,
the first rule of Fight Club? You don't talk about Fight Club. And it's the same thing with national security letters. When you receive them, part of the act of receiving them is you can't tell anybody that you even got them. You can't tell the users involved. You can't say anything about them.
Right.
So we really haven't had a clue as to how many of these are floating around out there. What Google has managed to do, and this is really something pretty remarkable, is they managed to convince the government to at least let Google put out those broad figures that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least we have an idea now. Are we talking about hundreds? Are we talking about thousands? Are we talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands? We now know, because Google was able to do this. And then they made this part, as you said, part of their normal transparency report where they release information about government demands to block data and remove search results and things like that. So this is a little bit of sunlight that's finally that Google has managed to expose on national security letters. We have a lot further to go, because it could clearly be argued, is it going to help terrorists to know how many national security letters there are? I mean, if we knew exactly that there were, you know, 2,470 that were sent to,
right,
this company, what does that? How is that going to help help terrorism, you know, advance in some way?
And let me ask you this, Lauren. You know, because I have mixed feelings. On one hand, we think there might be a federal government invasion of privacy. On the other hand, how many people would go nuts and go ballistic if terrorist activity occurred again? And we knew about it, or we didn't know about it because we didn't check things that were obvious.
Yeah, I think you're right. If there's gross negligence, we're not going to put up for it. On the other hand, what's happened is since the Patriot Act was enacted and renewed, and since the Homeland Security Act went into place, what we have seen when there have been investigations of the way the FBI operates with national security letters and these affiliated, some of these affiliated intelligence mechanisms, that there's a great deal of abuse of them in terms of overly broad requests for information, dragging in people that really shouldn't have been investigated at all. And the problem is, if they're kept so secret, the way national security letters have been up till now, at least we now know how many there are floating around in some respects, if you don't have any oversight of them, and we don't know how many there are or who they're directed to, even in broad categories, how do we know whether or not the abuse is occurring? So it's, as usual with these things, it's a question of balance, right? You have to keep some things secret, but just because you have to keep some things secret doesn't mean you have to keep everything secret. And we need to be very diligent to draw that line in the proper place.
Good point. Lauren, thanks so much. Groups representing federal air marshals and flight attendants are outraged over the Transportation Security Administration's decision to allow small pocket knives back into aircraft cabins. They say they will ask the TSA to reconsider the policy. Both groups say they learned about the policy change just on Tuesday and charge that the TSA is forgetting about the terrorist attacks that led to the formation of that agency. On Tuesday, the TSA administrator announced that small pocket knives and an array of sporting equipment, like hockey sticks and things like that, which were banned from the aircraft cabins in the wake of the 9/11 terrorist attacks, will be allowed in U.S. planes beginning April 25th. And by the way, in the state of Michigan, they say, nope, we've got a law prohibiting knives of any length in secure areas of airports. So we're going to have to see how that unfolds as well. I've got to tell you, this may be one of the most idiotic rulings I have ever heard. If you know anything about weapons or knives, 2.36 inches can do some serious damage to somebody. And what would happen if a terrorist picked up a little baby and held one of these knives to the little baby's neck and marched its way to the cockpit area and demanded that the cockpit be opened? This is stupid and needs to be changed immediately. I can't believe the TSA administrator would approve something like this. And federal marshals and flight attendants are ballistic about the ruling. And by the way, while all this was going on, the TSA signs a $50 million uniform deal right in the middle of billions in these possible federal cuts. They just want to buy brand new uniforms for everybody. $50 million there. How about that? Dow Jones Industrial Average rallying to record high still. So if you're in the stock market, what do? Do you get out or do you keep buying? In a moment, Damon Vickers joins us. We're going to talk about what he thinks we should do. Actress Valerie Harper, best known to TV viewers for her very memorable 70s role of Rhoda on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, has been diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. She's 73 years old. This is what she says. I don't think of dying. I've had a good run. The huge ocean sloshing beneath the icy shell of Jupiter's moon Europa likely makes its way to the surface in some places, suggesting that astronomers may not need to drill down deep to investigate. It might be there right on the surface, and that means it could be capable of supporting life as we know it. Richard C. Hoagland with us. What a great story, Richard.
Well, does this have a kind of a ring of familiarity for you?
Yeah, well, it means that you predicted this a long time ago.
Back in 1979.
You've been right about that. You've been right about water on the moon, Mars.
What's so weird is the confirmations announced today by Caltech and Mike Brown and JPL are almost identical to our predictions 30-some years ago.
That's exciting. I mean, I wanted you on for two reasons. One, to talk about this curiosity, but also to just tell you, you are years ahead of NASA, years ahead, and you don't have any equipment.
Well, I have a brain. Well, that's the only thing you need to do science.
So anyways, there's something sloshing around Europa,
really,
and who knows?
What's interesting about this is that Mike Brown, who's the guy, by the way, at Caltech, that demoted Pluto to a quasi-planet when he found Sedna and the other ones beyond it.
A planetoid.
A planetoid, you know. I mean, Mike Brown is not happily loved in many parts of the astronomical community. Anyway, he's the guy that's with the big telescopes, you know, Palomar and Keck, you know, has been able to do spectroscopy with such precision on Europa from Earth, 400-some million miles away, compared to the flybys of Voyager and Cassini and Galileo, that he was able to find this little feature in the spectrum indicating on the surface of the ice, because remember, Europa is a body the size of the Earth's moon, 2,000 plus miles across, with a 100-mile deep ocean liquid on top of a rocky core covered with a complete shell of ice, like 50, 60 miles deep. And what Brown was able to do is to see the signature where somehow the ocean under that ice cap is coming up through, leaving chlorine, which is then bombarded by sulfur from the other Galileo moon, Io, producing magnesium sulfate. And the logic train says that that all means that that ocean has to be basically as salty with sodium chloride as an earthly ocean, which is the end product of 4.5 billion years of planetary evolution.
It's got to have some life.
Exactly what I said 30 years ago.
It's got to have some life. Hey, by the way, real quickly, what's happening with Curiosity on Mars?
Well, the weird thing about Curiosity is a week ago it had a brain blank.
Right.
And they've been working to try to get it back online. And now they've announced, because of a solar flare, they had to shut it all down so there can be no transmissions, no memory exchanges, no data, whatever, for another week. Then they go behind the sun, as seen from Earth. Mars goes behind the sun for 2 weeks. So they're carving out between 4 and 6 weeks where they can do something with this robot, and we'll never know what it is. And this is really weird. And then finally, for all the people who were expecting to see me at Conscious Life Expo with the results from Chichen Itza and some stunning physics correlations, I'm going to be at Kerry Cassidy's Awake and Aware conference in Glendale on the first week in April, April 5th, 6th, and 7th is the conference in Glendale. And you go to the website, awakeandaware2013.net, and you can see the schedule, and you can see I'm going to blow some minds with some.
You're going to startle the world. Great. Thanks, Richard. Richard's website, enterprisemission.com. No, that's not Hoagland laughing. That is a man that sounds like a man on Long Island in New York. Police have busted him for laughing too loudly in his own home. His neighbor got upset, complained. They have given him two summons. He's 42 years old. Each summons carries a $250 fine, 15 days in jail for laughing too loudly in his own home. What is happening to this planet? Up next, Damon Vickers joins us, author of The Day After the Dollar Crashes. We're going to get his take on just this new bull market on Coast to Coast AM. Damon Vickers, founder of Nine Points Management and Research, which is a Seattle-based investment firm, has correctly called three market tops since the year 2000, frequent guest on business television programs, and, of course, Coast to Coast AM. Vickers launched a private fund in 2008. That jumped over 60%. You are bullish, Damon, on what's been going on, aren't you?
I can't help it, George.
How come?
Well, it's just price. I mean, I'd love to be bearish. Give me price trends that are in a downtrend. Give me a market that I can short. Let's make money from the market going down. But it's not what's happening right now. What's happening is we've had 13 years now of grinding, wear you down, wear you out, multiple bear markets, many investors throwing in the towel. But in the backdrop of all of that, in the last several months, we have broken out. We have broken through all the overhead supply that has kept us kind of range bound here for these 13 years.
Everyone I've talked to, Damon, says, run, you're going the other way.
Well, you know, I'm just going with price. You know, there have been a number of bear markets since 2000. 2000 to 2003, we were short the market. We owned bear market funds that went up a lot. When 9/11 hit and the planes hit the Trade Center, we were close to 100% short, if not 100% short the markets when that happened. And they're just accentuating the trend that followed that. When the markets opened up, they were down 700 points. In 2008, we were also short the market, being involved with WaMu and AIG and any number of names. And I did launch a fund that year, and it was initially with my own money, initially capitalized. And, yeah, we did about 63% that year. And how did we do it? What we do is we let price tell us what we need to do. We don't try to throw our biases on the market or our perceptions or the negative news. But really, what is price doing? Because I want to align myself at all times with what price is actually doing.
And what do you mean by price, Damon?
Well, you gotta think about this. In any market that's going to rise, I mean, imagine a stock at $20, you know, that goes to $100 over the next 4 years. Well, it's gonna go higher. The fact that it goes higher is confirmation that the trend is in place. If you're not willing to buy an asset that's rising in value, you'll never own the stocks that are rising in value. If you buy the stocks that are beaten down, generally the merchandise that's beaten down stays beaten down. And any investor that owns Microsoft, Intel, Cisco, Bank America, Citicorp, they know exactly what I'm talking about because it's throwing money into money heaven. They said money goes there and it never comes back. So, look, I know exactly what you're saying. The news is not good, you know, but let's look at this. You know, the last time we had a major breakthrough, because really what's happening, George, is a new bull market has been born. We have launched, and a new bull market has emerged at right now. 1982, bad news, right? Because in 1982 was the last time the Dow Jones busted out. Unemployment was at 10% nationally, close to 11. We were in the worst recession since the Depression in 1982. Inflation was 13.5%. And interest rates in 1982 were 21.5%.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Unbelievable.
It was terrific. Flint, Michigan, the unemployment rate was 23%. And the bear market that preceded 1982 had gone on for 15 years. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average had tried many times to break through that 1,000 milestone, failing every time, wearing people out. We had the 73-74 bear market where the market went down 70%. But inevitably, we did break out, but we broke out in a time when there wasn't necessarily good news, and it didn't matter. I know, you know, and I'm probably more conservative, and I would say Democratic or liberal, but forget my political bias. Forget whether you love Obama or hate him or whatever else. The fact is prices have broken out. I know the news isn't all there yet, but let's say this. Price almost always precedes positive fundamentals. Price almost always precedes negative fundamentals.
Yes, that's a good
take
point.
Take us back to 2008 when the markets were breaking, when WaMu was breaking, when Lehman was breaking. We also shorted Lehman in 2008. When these things, assets were breaking down, the prices were going down, and you had certain money managers, certain advisors that were, quote, value investors, and they were piling in to the bottomless pit sinking sands of the financial sector because the news, as of yet, really wasn't so bad.
No, it wasn't really out then, was it?
Right. But price generally precedes fundamentals. So this is something we really have got to take a look at here. We've got assets, and we can go over a number of them. For 13 years, they have made attempts at breaking out, and we have broken out. That's a fact. And this market is bullish. It looks like it's heading significantly higher. And absolutely, I mean, investors have got to, you know, they've got to suspend their doubts, their fears, the gloom and doomers. And I know who they are. We know who their names are.
Oh, yeah. And the old adage, Damon, always was, you know, you buy quality companies, you're going to get a nice return. Does that still hold up?
Of course it always holds up. The question is, how do you find these quality companies? What makes a quality company?
Right.
You know, is Microsoft a quality company? There's some good people.
Who knows? Is Facebook? Who knows, right?
I mean, well, I don't know. I mean, Microsoft, the PC is dead. You invest in Microsoft, I think you're sending money to money heaven. I don't think it's good. But we know who the doomsayers are. They're always pressing them on the piano. A piano has 88 keys, George, but they always seem to hit the middle C note over and over again. You think their finger might get tired inevitably, maybe a cramp or something. It might set in. And we know who they are. They're Peter Schiff. They're Martin Weiss. They're Mark Faber, they're Nouriel Roubini. There's these same guys that hit their note every time. It doesn't matter whether it's sunny. It doesn't matter whether there's no clouds in the sky, because for them, in their world, it's always rainy. It's always gloom. It's always a bad
day. Good point. Damon, we're going to come back more on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Damon Vickers with us. We'll take your calls here in just a moment as well. So overall, you would say the next year or so might be pretty upbeat, Damon.
Yeah, I think it's going to be astonishingly upbeat. And I don't mean to, you know, bash those guys one way or the other. They're friends of mine, a number of them. It gets tiring to hear the same droning on and on, regardless of what's happening. I mean, you have to be a church member of what's working now, you know, and at all times. And when you project your biases, you always got to be a bear. There's no such thing as always being a bear. You know, if I wrote the book the day after the dollar crashes, give me a dollar that's actually trending down and I'll beat the tom-toms all over it. I'm ready for it. But we haven't. We've moved sideways for the last 6 years. Markets have broken out. Let me give you an historical perspective.
Okay.
I think it's beautiful. When we broke through 1,000 on the Dow in 1982, it was a big, big moment. I remember the evening. Paul Kangas, you know, rest his soul, Nightly Business Report, the best of goodbyes, great broadcaster, and we're announcing that we finally broke through 1,000. You know, we went up 1,100% from that 1,000 breakup, 1,100%. We went through the roof. We saw the birth of Starbucks and Cisco and Home Depot, all kinds of names came during
everything. It just exploded.
Amazing period of economic growth. Nobody would have saw it coming because, I mean, my God, in 1982, look, interest rates, 21%, unemployment, 11 nationally, 16 in any number of states. It was negative. So here we are. We have broken out of 13 years. We've now broken out. There are a lot of assets that are also doing extremely well, which we can talk about. Where do we see this thing going? Well, this year, I think we're gonna move closer to 16,200. On the Dow Jones Industrial
Average. So that's about a 2,000 bump, right?
From where we are? Another 2,000 or so points higher than we are now. And I'm not saying it's going there in a straight line. I'm also not being crazy euphoric. I'm just saying this is what's happening. We're rising. We've broken out. This looks where it looks like where it's going, about 16,200 on the Dow. This year, that's going to give us about roughly a 20% overall rise in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And in that, there are going to be any number of stocks that'll see gains of, I don't know, anywhere from 40 to 70% or 100% or more, even in individual stocks. It's going to be a very positive year. That's just this year. This is my opinion, what I see coming. Going down a little further down the road, I think we take out the 16,000, and I think in the next 2 years, 2.5 years, we're looking at closer to 19,000, 19,500.
Wow.
Very dynamic period, and we know it because of the individual assets that are in the indexes. I'm talking about the Dow Jones Industrial Average, but any index, Dow Jones, S&P 500, S&P 100, Russell 2000, is made up of the individual components. And this is where our work started with this, because I've been bullish here now for months. I did a CNBC interview about a month ago, where I said the market is going to rip significantly higher, and it's just there because we know it because we know the assets that we own. We own Google, we own these names, and we know they're leading the market, and we feel them going higher. They're going, I think, it's significantly higher.
Now let me ask you, what happens if there's a major conflict, a major war, Damon? Will that affect it?
Well, I mean, the major war is going to affect it. The nuclear meltdown somewhere in the northern
wherever
United States.
So there's variables could affect it.
Wait, the war between the lizard people and the shadow people is going to.
Oh, that could happen at any time. You know that.
It's happening right now. I can't know these things. I don't know that. All I know price. I observe price. I act on price. I try not to project my emotions, my bias, because there are any number of reasons why I could say, but this can't be happening. What about the deficits? What about the sequester? What about Nancy Pelosi? What about us going to a hell in a handbasket? What about the drones hunting down U.S. citizens?
Yeah.
What about the crazy thing that you made at the top of the hour, which is a great show opening, by the way, about the TSA letting on pocket knives that are 2.5 inches?
Truly unbelievable.
You nailed it.
Yeah.
All these things are crazy.
It makes no sense.
It makes no sense, but there again, we have price. There again, we have price. And price is a better determinant of what's actually happening than what we think or our feelings or our emotions or our political bias or our discomfort. Price is price. Price is broken out. 13 years of sideways movement, 2000. And that's the other thing. When you go on CNBC, you look at CNBC, you look at Bloomberg, you look at all these people, the only thing that they're doing is they go up, they do a great job on CNBC. But they go back to 2007 and they compare it to 2007. Wait a second. We need to go back all the way to 2000 because that's where it stopped. We stopped in 2000, cracked into the dot-com meltdown, ran back up there in 2007, collapsed into 2008, came back one more time a little bit, a lot of volatility in the last 2 years, including a 3,000-point meltdown 2 summers ago, and now we have the last 2 months, we're through. We've broken through. Two things have got to happen. One is, if you're a professional like us, we're buying this market, we're long this market, we're long a lot of good names, they're moving higher, we're seeing double-digit returns in any number of assets. It's looking very, very positive, and it's looking positive moving forward. The second thing you got to do is, if you're a short seller, which means that you're trying to make money from the market going down, and you are short the market, you're losing money, and you may be about to lose it all. So you got to cover. So there's two ranges of buyers.
And that pushes the stocks up.
And that pushes it even higher. But the main thing is this. Two things rule people. One is greed. One is fear. I know the fear is kind of a good motivator, but greed is a good motivator too. Self-preservation.
Now you sound like Gordon Gekko.
Well, greed is good when it's time to be greedy. And you don't want to hesitate. This market, we've broken out. And as an investor looking to provide for their family, enhance their family security and the range of choices that they may need and that they want and have to have a good life and pass it on to their family, investors need to get long this market. We've got to own this market. This is a bull market. A new bull market has been born. It's here.
Let's go to the calls. Let's go to Jim, truck driving in North Carolina. Hey, Jim, you're on with Damon Vickers. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Hey, George. Longtime listener, buddy.
Thanks, Jim.
I have a question for your guest. I have a company, 401k. 2 years ago, when the market kind of fell out, I put all my stocks in stable. I want to retire at age 62, and I'm just wanting his opinion on whether I should take it out of the stable and, put it back in something else until I'm 62.
What do you think, Damon?
Well, how old are you now, might I ask?
I am 60.
2 years to go, then, before he wants to retire.
Well, I think you've got a nice 2 years ahead of you, and I think the outlook is very, very positive in the next 2 years. So I think it's really what you feel comfortable with. I think if you're diversified, you're not overly concentrated, and it really depends what you own. But I think you'll have a very nice 2 years. It'd be a shame to kind of pull it out needlessly. I know that there are a lot of people looking at the market right now and seeing that prices are up and thinking, I'll sell it. And this is really good because he's asked a very good question. So I'll give you a typical investor. They see an asset go $5, $10, $5, $10, $5, $10, $5, $10. Let's call it a decade, $5, $10, $5, $10, $5, $10, $5, $10. Honey, you know what I'm going to do? The next time it goes to $10,
I'm out.
I'm going to sell it, yeah. I promise. And then what it does is it doesn't go to 10. Uh-oh, it goes to 10.50, rushes home to his wife, tells her, honey, you'll never know what happened. Today, the asset, the XYZ company, Bigwig, Lots, or whatever, closed at $10.50. I sold it. Okay, time travel 4 years later. Now his wife, you what? I can't believe you sold that thing. Do you know what it is now?
It's at 30 or 40.
$150 a share.
Oh, my gosh.
But you see, that's exactly what happened.
All right, Damon, what drives the stocks to those heights?
Stocks, in the short run, and I mean 5 minutes, some crazy out-of-control, addict day trader, some you know, day by day type of thing, all the crazy intense financial information moment by moment. It's emotion. It's a lottery. It doesn't mean anything. Longer term, you know, it's the value that's created by the prosperity of the business and how the product or service spreads itself through society, how the technology is adopted in society, and the ramped up sales and earnings that accrue from social adoption. We call what we do in terms of growth investing, when we're growth investing, we're doing a lot of growth investing right now. We own Cabela's. Gun sales up 300-400% over the last 2 months.
Yep.
Love Cabela's. And that's what drives stock prices inevitably is sales and earnings. And sales earnings come from people.
Good point. Let's go to Eve in Minneapolis, Minnesota. First time caller. Eve, hello there.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Eve.
Hi, Eve.
I heard that people such as Buffett and Paulson, our ex-treasurer, are actually getting out of the stock market or selling. Does that indicate they know something the rest of us don't know?
No. Paulson had a really good year shorting the mortgage debacle. We were involved in that as well. I don't know. He did a lot of buying in Citigroup last year, which was a total why would he do that? Warren Buffett is doing just fine. Warren Buffett's not really doing any selling at all. In fact, he just acquired Heinz Company, the ketchup maker, and Berkshire Hathaway, BRK, Berkshire Hathaway, has what? Broken out. BRKA, BRKB, either one of them. They have broken out. One of those share prices, I think, is around $150,000 a share. I remember it when it was $1,500, George.
Oh, my God.
And then there's the lesser share price, I think, is down there in the, you know, what is it, 100, something like that. It's a lot less, and they're good. So, no, they're very bullish.
Would you dabble in foreign markets like China?
China's amazing. I mean, they're amazing people. They're disciplined. They've got a good work culture. They can make change so fast in China because they have authoritarian regime. they're an amazing culture. China has a lot of overhang. I mean, we saw a good piece on Sunday night about the housing bubble. It's the second piece that I think we've seen on that about the ghost cities and all that. So I think there's a tremendous future for China, but it's got to digest some things. But you can't count them out because they're just amazing. But not enough about China, but how about more specifically, how about what's going on with Samsung? Samsung is doing astonishing things. Apple may be faltering.
Yeah, you're right.
Terribly. But Samsung is rocking it. They're rocking it with the Android. They're rocking it with the smart TV. It was rumored that Apple is going to come out with a smart TV. The rumor is still out there, but you know what? Samsung actually came out with
it. They did it. Yeah.
And it's phenomenal. It's incredible.
Let's go to Steve in Reseda, California. You're up with us. Go ahead, Steven.
Hi, George.
Hello.
Hi, Damian.
Hey.
I got a statement and a question. It blows my mind to listen tonight. And, they're printing money like crazy. We just got done stealing a whole bunch of money from the American people, big bailouts, too big to fail it, which in my opinion really isn't capitalism. It's something else. But, it just seems to me like the stock people are like intoxicated on the fornication of the American people, you know, in a country that's got a AA credit rating. And, if it was like my personal finances, I'd be like, panicking, you know, but my question
that's quite a sentence, the intoxication of the fornication. I love that. That's good.
And my question is, we had a bubble on stocks, internet stocks in the 80s, and then we had a bubble in the housing market in 08. And, where did the bubble move? Did it move to gold or did it move to the stocks? I noticed gold goes up when the market goes up. That's not the norm, so. Maybe you can comment on the next bubble, and I'll take my answer off here. Thank you.
I love you. Well, okay. A couple of responses to that. All good points. All good points. Talking about, what are you talking about? You talked about bubbles in the stock market, this and that, the fornication, this and that. What we hear, this is very interesting, okay, George? because what we hear is a lot of what. We don't hear a lot of people saying, yeah, that Damon Vickers, yeah, totally right on. Yeah, I agree with you. Yay. We're not there. We've got disbelief.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lots.
I can tell you, when everybody's on board, that's 2,900 times earnings, and everybody's going to believe. But I tell you something else. When this market inevitably does top, which I think is going to be somewhere between 3, and as I said, about 3 and 6,000 points higher than where it is now, it's a long way from here, the news that we don't have now is going to be great. The news is going to be fantastic, and people are going to be really optimistic.
Well, here's the problem. When it tops, how do we know it's topped?
It's a consensus, George. Everybody believes and has conviction fully at two places. One is the top and one is the bottom. We're not there yet.
Let's go to Rob in Vancouver, Canada with us. Robbie, go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good, Rob. Thank you.
Quick comment about investing in China. I'm an investment manager here in Vancouver. I've been so for 20 years. I have a bit of a problem when people talk about how great of an opportunity China is. You know, can we really sit here and trust, you know, the numbers that are coming out of China, particularly when we're talking about business revenue, profits, and so on? You know, there's the issue of China being the largest buyer of U.S. debt, you know, and the threat that poses. However, why do all those companies come over here to North American markets to raise capital? Like, if they have so much capital awash there, and the companies are so profitable, why do they need to come here? I mean, there have been multiple public companies that have come here to raise capital, and it's been shown that, you know, all the financial numbers backing them have been completely fraudulent, and investors have been laid out. So, you know, you really have to take it with a grain of salt, in my opinion, and as far as I'm concerned, there's so many great opportunities here in North America, you know, that we don't need to go and, you know, risk money on something that we're absolutely unsure of.
Let's wrap up here. A minute to go or so, Damon. What do you think?
Well, it's one thing to point the finger at China. We could also point the finger at the Vancouver market that's had transparency and Wild West status for many, many years as well. There's a huge boom going on in China. But there's no doubt about it. We're not big China experts, but I can't ignore, you know, my visit to Hong Kong a couple of months ago and what I saw. It's an amazing economy, amazing people, and there's opportunity globally for all kinds of things. We'd like to make a special offer to Coast to Coast listeners. And, you know, we rarely do this, but this is an amazing time. And what we want to do is go on our website, DamonVickers.com, and I'm going to open up 50 places for investors, possible new clients. We rarely do this, private clients. We'll take a look at their portfolios, see what you have. If you've got the right assets, man, this is going to be a great time for you. But if you've got the wrong stuff, you're going to be sucking wind, and that's not going to be good. Go to DamonVickers.com, DamonVickers.com. We'll be happy. First 50 people that go there right now will open it up to you for Coast to Coast. We love you, George. We love Coast to Coast. And, gosh, if there's reasons to be cheerful, there sure is tonight.
I'm going to watch this 14-2, and let's see what happens. Damon, thank you so much for being on the program. Damon Vickers, of course, his book, The Day After the Dollar Crashes, but he's pretty darn upbeat now, isn't he? And he sees a stock market that will continue to go up with 17 to 19,000 eventually. That's pretty huge. Up next, a classic Coast to Coast for you as Robert Stephen Thomas joins us. Intelligent Intervention, the Missing Link in the History of Human Evolution. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.